Blog Talk Radio.
I never believed that. I thought you were a myth.
Well, I'm not. But I will tell you something that is. The belief that human beings are kind.
No, Caesar. There are some.
Oh, a handful perhaps, but not most of them. Oh, they won't learn to be kind until we force them to. We can't do that until we are free.
How do you propose to gain this freedom?
By the only means left to us. Revolution.
But it's doomed to failure.
Perhaps. This time.
And the next.
Maybe.
But you'll keep trying.
You, above everyone else, should understand. We cannot be free until we have power. How else can we achieve it?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space to exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. It is the midweek, and it is March. We're about 2 weeks before, or 2 weeks in, as we approach the Winter Soldier film. I know that the captain is waiting with bated breath, as am I. And actually, I had to hold off shouting out comicbookmovies.com. They have 10 minutes of the Winter Soldier straight from the opening credits into the film, HD quality. I looked at about 2.5 minutes and I had to refrain from looking at the rest of it. I said, this has got to stop. There's so much anticipation for this film, they can't help themselves but just keep on leaking this thing out. So I had to stop myself, almost like the Amy Chua book, Triple Package. You have to forestall instant gratification. That's how some of the successful ethnicities, according to her, have become successful. Impulse control. Having said all that, folks, welcome to the Midweek in Review edition of AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Join in on the fun, the discourse. We won't hurt you that much. We won't beat you up that much. Give us your protestations, your questions, what have you. We can handle it. Let's go to a quick urban alternative groove, black rock, psychedelic soul, afro punk. We do what we do. This is, I just saw it. Okay. Did I lose it that quickly? Oh, here we go. Do Nothing Wrong. Do Nothing Wrong by Black Murda. See you in a few moments. Let's groove.
Take a life, ain't never had the nerve. Take a life,
She's treating me so bad. She don't deserve anything better. Death can't forget her. Death can't forget her. So I think I better leave her alone before I make up my mind to do something wrong. And I don't wanna do nothing wrong.
Okay, folks, without further ado, of course, that was Black Murda, M-E-R-D-A, classic rock funk group, black rock psychedelic soul from the late 60s, early 70s. Detroit's own Black Murda. Do the research, folks. See where the music has come from, where it's going. I hate to say, dare I say where it's going, but this is where the Afro-punk psychedelic soul, this is the history behind it. Touring with the Temptations, definitely a precursor to Prince and all the other groups that kind of went in that direction, Lenny Kravitz, and a contemporary of course, the late, great Jimi Hendrix, which we'll talk about later on during the broadcast, his biopic, his forthcoming biopic. All right, folks, again, Afro featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the Captain, to the bridge, as always. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
With his opening monologue, I was going to leave it alone. But now, since he opened the can of worms, I must address the can of worms pertaining to Captain America. You see now, let's understand something. When it comes to movies, and you go out and you sit down in the movie theater and you watch these theatrical releases, you know, you have different levels at where these movies can be graded. You have terrible, then you have poor, then you have fair, you know, fair, and you have all right, then you have good, then you have very good, then you have a great movie. Now, the first Captain America, in my opinion, was poor. It was poor at a grand scale. It wasn't a terrible movie. It was watchable. It was poor. And you understand that they're essentially building the universe. You got it, all right, especially at this point. Now, Avengers, that is a great movie. That's at the other end of the spectrum. Now, I think, based on the trailers that I've seen already with this Captain America movie, and they should be paying us for this, not for nothing, you know? This is a sidebar. You should be paying us for this, all right? I think that this movie is definitely maybe three steps up from the poor. So right now you're looking at a movie that's definitely in the all right to good range. That's where I think it's going to be. It's going to fall somewhere in there. I don't think it's going to be a great movie. I just don't think it has the elements for it. But we shall see once April 4th happens. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Well, you know, the adage, Captain, preaching to the choir. In looking at the first, I'd say, 2.5 minutes out of the 10 minutes, again, folks, for those who do not have impulse control, you can simply go to comicbookmovies.com and see clearly the first, I mean, solidly the first 10 minutes of the movie, the opening, you know, the page-turning, the legendary now legendary page-turning intro, while the credits, the opening credits intro of Marvel, when you see the Marvel logo eventually. And then it goes into the beginning of the film, and I'm catching myself looking at it, and being that I'm already part of the nerd choir, I'm engaged. I'm engaged, and I had to, you know, I said, you know what? Let me pull back because this is going to upset me. We got about another 2 weeks. I can hold off. So be that as it may, for those who do not have impulse control, you know where to go. Shouting out Q Storm, stalwart supporter of the Afro Nerd Machine, and he has a question that I think we both can answer because we are New Yorkers, and I never thought about really getting in on de Blasio per se, his honor de Blasio. He's asking, it's not in the show's notes, but I'm curious to get your opinions on de Blasio's horrible job rating, 34% down from 53% since only January. Yeah, so we're in 2.5 months in, and his ratings are down. I'll say this briefly. I was speaking to Captain Kirk's predecessor, Mr. Starks, a.k.a. Iron Man, who is a Long Islander. He really does not have a dog in the mayoral race, so to speak. But he is a conservative, and actually, he was more of a hardline conservative than I was. I mean, he helped me along with it, but we're friends, longtime friends. So we started noticing some things, and it was a natural progression, but he was on the conservative bandwagon before I was. Anyway, I mentioned that because that's part of his critique of de Blasio. Now, I had to forestall Call of the Tribe in dealing with de Blasio because de Blasio is a once removed black person in the diaspora, so to speak, if you know what I mean. He's married to a black woman, and he has two children of color with this black woman, and they're very Africoid looking in their appearance. You would not know they were his father, that he was their father per se. If you saw them on the street, you would think they're just African-American children. So many black folks in this city who are overwhelmingly Democratic, they were heeding the call of a tribe. We love white people that love us. We do. And it was very hard for me, to a certain degree, to not fall into his son's afro, his rather large afro, Dante de Blasio. He threw that afro out there. It was an infectious afro, and it was a great media campaign. And then his daughter came in second. But Starks and I, we speak very candidly, just like I speak with the captain. And we were like, you know, we kind of sort of like family because it's a progressive one. You know, we're not against multiculturalism. We practice multiculturalism, all three of us. We have friends of all hues and ethnicities, and we dig that. I support that. I'm not really this even though this show is called Afro Nerd, we do try not to be blackety black all the time. So I appreciate the fact that we're in a point in our history where a multiracial family can sit in Gracie Mansion. The problem is think he's a little sloppy. And the way that Starks calls it, I'm going to channel Mr. Starks on this a little bit. He said he just did not feel comfortable with this kind of hippie-esque vibe that they give off. They give off a hippie-esque vibe. You look at the de Blasio's NYU photograph. I think he has one from 79. He has a Jufro, as they say. I say that to be half colloquial. But and he has a Jufro, and he looks half high. Okay, that's in his youth. I'm not saying he was high, but he looks half high. His woman, very Afrocentric in her appearance. Her children are very Afrocentric. And some folks say, well, what's wrong with Afrocentric? Everyone has different opinions as to what they consider Afrocentric. There could be 15 different ways to depict Afrocentrism. A little sloppy around the edges, a little half radical. We saw that de Blasio closed down 3 charter schools because he felt that there was there wasn't a parity with the public schools. He wanted to have public schools, and I think special education schools, to take over this space. And many of these schools, you have charter schools sharing space with public schools, and that causes a kind of dichotomy, a kind of ghost. I'm going to use the term ghost. It's probably more overt. But I'm going to say ghost jealousy, because you have these charters of a parochial experience or a private experience. So you have a private experience with these kids that are performing at a higher level. The equipment is newer. There's a lot of things going on, and it could be perceived as being put in the face of the public school kids that are not getting that level of education. They're not wearing uniforms. They're not perceived as special, per se. But the problem is, if there is a problem, is that the public has a right to pursue a charter school education. They do have that right, considering that some of these schools in New York public schools are getting failing grades. I'm not talking about the students per se. That's another thing. But I'm talking about the school itself. When the school gets graded, these schools are coming up short. Didn't we mention this on the air, Captain, about this? I think we did mention it, where a few weeks ago, the New York Post showed had kind of an expose on a public school that was graded poorly, and some PR person representing the school told the students, well, maybe you students, some of the student body, should write letters in an effort to combat the critique, to combat the criticism. The letters, ladies and gentlemen, again, these are from juniors and seniors, students that are almost out of there already, that are supposed to be college-bound. They were rife with radical errors, syntax errors. They were written by young men and women that were, for all intents and purposes, it seemed as if they were dyslexic. And these weren't one or two letters. They were 20, 30, 40 letters that they were able to put out there. Now, this is under the de Blasio regime, where you're seeing failing public schools, and he doesn't really feel keen on the public having an alternative. The charter school is just an alternative. It's giving folks of moderate means, it's giving them a shot for their children, giving their children a shot. But, again, I like de Blasio personally. I like his family personally. I like the fact that I'm going to close this up. You could see I can go on about this. And I want the captain to weigh in on this as well. I like the family personally, but you see that radicalism isn't translating that great. And I wasn't too fond of his inauguration as well. You had radicals up there that were making references to slavery and to emancipation language and Reconstruction language. I mean, come on. It's pandering. Pandering to the victims with the victimized mentality, the victimization paradigm. That's it. I could do a whole show on this, Q. You should open it. It's a bag of worms. Again, I love what they represent. I kind of overshadowed something. I want to mention this, and I'm going to move along. It is funny now. I will say this on the flip side, because I can be nuanced. It's funny that I heard some conservative commentators, or some just louts that are behind the mic. It's funny that how some of them did not like Don Dre de Blasio's influence in the sense that, well, because his kid is a black child, the oddity of that is considered an advantage. So they're saying that, well, his family is an advantage in this campaign. It just worked out that way. It's laughable. Who would have thunk it that a white man who has children of color and a wife of color, that would have worked? That wouldn't have worked 5 years ago. It might not have worked certainly not 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It just so happens that society has moved along where it's kind of cool. But politicians have put their family out front for eons. It's just that this time it works this way. It happened to work. But it goes against conventional wisdom. And he was critiqued for that, and I thought it was laughable. That, he's putting his kid, he's putting his black kid up there. Of course, that the oddity of that is an advantage. That's an advantage now. That wasn't guaranteed. And his wife was an ex-quote-unquote ex-lesbian. That's not supposed to work. That's supposed to work. That's it, Captain. Your thoughts, and then we'll move along.
All right. Can I ask you a question? What's his agenda? Is he conservative? Is he liberal? What is de Blasio? What is he?
Oh, come on.
Who's de Blasio?
Come on.
What is he?
You know what he is. I'm going to tell
no,
you.
No, what is
you
he?
You know what he is. He's liberal.
Is
he's
he?
A Democrat.
Okay.
He's
right.
The first Democrat in 20-something years. In 20-something years, Captain.
All right.
Yeah. But
now,
you knew that. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it makes for good radio. We got to do that from time to time.
Okay. All right.
Now listen, all right? Everything in the Matrix is misdirection. It's an okey-doke, all right? The left is really the right. The right is really the left. Up is really down. Down is really up, all right? So you have to understand something. His family and all of that, that's good for the deaf, dumb, and blind. Well, that's what you are, deaf, dumb, and blind. So you like to see when white people, because you're a slave, you have a slave mentality, when white people like you. So you miss everything that's actually going on. How do we get in this position right now in the modern-day area in 2014 as black people? It's ultra, ultra liberal programs that got us here. Feminist movement done by liberal white males, boom. All those programs that led to the black woman saying, get out my house. I don't need any man here. I can collect welfare. I can collect food stamps. You can't be in the house. Liberal program. So I don't really care about his family. I couldn't care less if he had a gorgeous white woman, he had an 18-year-old white woman, if he has a black woman, he has this. It's your politics that's the only thing that matters. I don't care for the liberals because when you go look back in the history, when you look right there, how did we get in this situation? It's liberal program. Liberal politics doesn't work for us. We
think it's love to not know.
Exactly. Exactly. We think liberal politics works, but if you actually look in the history, it doesn't work for us. Actually, conservative situation would actually work better for a lot of us, because you have to get off your ass and do something for yourself underneath that regime. And this is a man telling you who's an independent. I don't like ultra conservatives. They come off like robots, you understand? But some of those values will move us along. Some of those values, the ultra liberal thing does not work. You just go back into the history and you can see. You can see a couple of us have used it, because underneath that, what we have done, we decided to do for ourselves too. So you were like liberal conservative, which is a smart perspective, which is really an independent theology. Back over to you, Sir Raphael Nerd. Let's go.
You know, I'm glad that he brought that up. I didn't expect to really be able to wax on it, but there's stuff I still did not mention. And, you know, listen, we're talking this way, and we're 3 months in. I liked Giuliani, so I'm that rare breed. Definitely a contrarian to the extent that many black folk, not all, but many did not like Giuliani. Probably indifferent towards Bloomberg. But the city was making money, rock and rolling, very clean, not so much in your face criminality. The crime rate is down to the levels of the 1960s. I know that I remember 42nd Street before and after Giuliani's influence and before Disney was there. I know if you can take a lady friend down there or pal around with your friends, you can go there comfortably. There's little things as far as comfort of maneuverability in the city that count. You know, being able to physically, you know, things that are tangible. The tangibles matter to me. The things you can physically see. That's what I dig it. So I wish de Blasio the best, but like the captain said, the great captain just said, ultra-liberalism does not work. We saw the pandering at that inauguration. Just Reconstruction talk in 2014, it's ludicrous. All right, enough. I can go on this. I could really get into the captain, but I'm going to let it go. Thanks, Q, as always. Actually, what I want to talk about full circle. Why can't I speak? Full circle. Everyone is talking about this, and we didn't touch on it. I'm sure the captain has a lot to talk about on this, because he's a little bit more on the conspiratorial line than I am. A little bit more. I try to keep my head in the sand on some things. But he does bring stuff to me through email that I have to scratch my head and say, whoa. The Malaysian airline, 370, we're at, I think, 11 days in, still missing. It's becoming more and more fascinating about how this thing is gone. And I'm thinking, really, I believe in Occam's razor. I've mentioned that term before, Occam's razor, which really means the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. If you want to be simple and straight down, this plane has been destroyed by way of terrorism. That's the simplest explanation. But we're hearing wormholes. We're hearing extra dimensions. We're hearing that this – I mean, you know, we're hearing all – you know, it's we believe Lost is real. This plane is the living embodiment of Lost, or now Resurrection, which is a new TV series of Omar Epps that we never really got a chance to speak about. Maybe we'll get into that this Saturday. And also, Captain, we're expecting Brandon Easton to stop by of the Watson and Holmes graphic novel. Man of color, graphic novelist. We need to speak to this gentleman. So he's excited to come through. So we have a few things lined up. That should be interesting. He'll sit in with us during the comic shop show. Anyway.
Excellent.
I need to get the clip from the Young Turks, where they actually delineate the the conspiracies to date with the missing airliner. You know, I told you the real reason why I wanted to talk about this is I find it interesting. I think the real story, the story behind the story, is that how the media are garnering ratings and are really more into pushing the I don't want to say salacious part of it, but the purient part of this story as opposed to the bare fact. I mean, all that it is speculation. The speculation is what they're about because it's leading to rating. CNN would prefer for this thing to be missing for the next 7 months and beyond. Because
Ford Bronco, OJ.
Exactly. This is a Ford Bronco. Excellent, Captain. This is a representative of a Ford Bronco that is never pulled over. That is never pulled over and never runs out of gas. And this is how they're treating it. And CNN, they haven't been number one for years. Now they're getting the best ratings they've ever gotten on this Malaysian crisis. So that's the story, believe it or not, that intrigues me more. It is a tragedy, and the tragic part of it is it bothers me, obviously. But the part that intrigues me even more than that is how the media are attacking this, specifically CNN. CNN trying to give you this magnanimous, altruistic impression when it's a ratings grab. It's a ratings grab. Knock it off. All about speculation. Where's the facts? Just the facts, man. Just the facts. They're not giving it to you. This is the Young Turks on the Malaysian plane mystery. We'll play this. We'll unpack. Hold on.
Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 is still missing after a few days, and about 239 people are on that flight. And it's led to a number of conspiracy theories as to where the plane disappeared, how it disappeared, and now it turns out that there were two passengers on that plane that were traveling with a stolen passport. But before we get to that, I want to share some of the theories that people have, some of which are insane. So one theory is that it was hijacked by terrorists that had fake passports. I think that that's plausible, given the fact that they were stolen, and also the two people who had the stolen passports were from Iran. So that's also fueling some of the terrorist
claims. Right. There was an Iranian middleman who bought the tickets for them. So that's the heart of the theory on why it might have been terrorists taking the plane. Look, that's by far the most plausible explanation, because terrorists have taken planes before.
Exactly.
And they bought one-way tickets. In this case, they did on 9/11 in cash, and they had an Iranian middleman. I mean, it's not conclusive, obviously, but I wouldn't even... Look, conspiracy theory means just a theory on how several people conspired to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be my leading candidate at this point.
Yes. Other thoughts include that it was disintegrated in midair due to some sort of explosion.
Yeah, it wasn't like poof, for no reason.
Yeah.
There was a mechanical problem, goes the theory, and the explosion was so severe that's why we can't find any trace of the plane or the people on the plane, because it disintegrated in midair.
Yes. The plane was torn apart by an unexpected or catastrophic event. Others believe that it was intercepted by UFOs.
Yeah, I'm going to put that near the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Others think that it was transported to another world via wormhole.
Okay. All right. That also does not seem overly likely. There are wormholes. They haven't sucked up any planes before.
And finally, pilot suicide. So they're thinking that a pilot intentionally crashed the plane, but they have yet to find where the crash is.
One of my favorites is that they landed the plane some undisclosed location in Vietnam. And they're now holding the people hostages, and they might load up the plane with more explosives and then get it back up in the air and do some terrorist plot that way.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it's scary stuff. It's scary to know that there are 239 people missing right now without a trace. We don't know where the plane is. There were a few instances where officials thought that there was a lead. For instance, they found some yellow object in the ocean, and they thought, hey, maybe this is part of the plane. And then they did some more research, and they found out, oh, it's just garbage with seaweed all over it. So it's unfortunate. There are no leads, and of course family members are totally scared and shocked that they're never going to see their loved ones again. Another thing to keep in mind is that apparently family members have been calling the cell phones of their loved ones, and it keeps ringing. So the phones aren't dead yet, so that's a little creepy.
Okay. Now, apparently some of that was done on air. That's also hard to believe. Are they really calling the cell phones of the people that were on the plane? Who knows? Now, look, all this is crazy, but you know what else is crazy? A giant plane goes missing, and we don't know where it is. For now, how many days has it been? Basically 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. That's unbelievable. So obviously, something happened, right? And it's, I think it's fair to guess. I don't know about the UFOs. I don't know that that's fair, right? But guessing about terrorist plots, et cetera, pilot suicide, whatever it might be, mechanical error, likely it's one of those things.
Right.
Right? And the fact that they can't find any traces of it just deepens the mystery. And it's I guess part of what annoys me a little bit is when people are like, oh, there's all these conspiracy theories out there. Okay, well, what's your non-conspiracy theory? You see what I'm saying?
Well, look, I'm going to be 100% real with you guys. Stories like this are really difficult to report on because all you can do is speculate, and I hate speculating, right? It's the worst thing. Here's the information we have so far, and then there are a bunch of conspiracy theories, you know, one of which is sort of plausible, but other than that, there's really nothing else to report. It's a sad and tragic story, but it doesn't make it any better to sit around and make stories up or speculate as to what could have happened.
No, but it's impossible to avoid. Everyone, including myself, is talking about, Jesus, what the hell happened to that plane?
Yeah.
So the whole world outside of Anna is curious about what the plane is.
No. Do not put words in my mouth. I'm curious, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, okay, so here's what I think happened. No, there's no value.
All right. Enough of that. Folks, again, we're talking about the Malaysian airline crisis, airline mystery, Flight 370. The call-in number, as always, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to go to a musical break in a few moments, but I did want to mention something, and I want the captain, of course, to weigh in because I think this is more of his expertise than myself. But I saw that Q-Storm, I believe has continued to listen via his automobile. And one of his questions in the chat room, or one of his comments, was that, well, you know, if this were a terrorist act or there were terrorists involved in this, they would have identified themselves already. You know, it's very very rare that a terrorist will not identify themselves, not take credit for this. My only thing is I don't think that is written in stone, because if you think about the Boston terrorist act last year, those young men, you know, they were on their own. They weren't really affiliated with a group, and they were simply caught. I mean, if they were not caught, because they tried it and for a few days successfully blended in with the crowd, there was a profile that they did not necessarily fit, because although they were Muslim, they were Caucasian, from the Caucasus Mountains, literally. So just as you have originals from Transylvania and originals, I'm talking about the original TV show now, this is the Afronaut show, and you have originals from Africa, original black folk, you have original whites. They were not necessarily, they didn't necessarily fit the profile, and if they were not caught, I don't think there would have been an identifiable terrorist cell or terrorist identification for what happened in Boston. So I'm still going to go by Occam's razor with the assumption that, listen, they were 3 days in. That clip was, I think, on the 11th. It was missing on the 8th. Now today is the 19th. Either it's a wormhole or it's a terrorist plot. For the sake of the Afro Nerd Show, I'm going with either one of those things. Captain, your thoughts? I see we have a call. We're going to have to go to a break. Caller, hold on, then we get to you. Your thoughts, Captain?
All right, let's understand something, all right? If there's a crime committed between two people, you have your story, then they have their story, then the police officer says there's three stories. You say, what do you mean by that? I have your story, I have their story, now I have to try to get at the truth. Now, let's understand something. You step outside in front of your house, it might not be in real time, but you can go Google and you can see yourself maybe 2 hours later in front of your house. If you have a cell phone on your body, it could be also be off. They could track you in real time. Also, your clothes have RF tags, modern-day clothes. Not stuff back in the 80s or early part of the 90s if you had those type of clothes. The clothes that you bought after that time, they have RF tags, and they could clock you. They can watch you, not necessarily watch you, but they know where you are via your clothes, believe it or not. They don't tell you that one, but that is true. Now, that's just someone who's inconsequential. You know, you're nothing. You're just a regular person going to work. You're not a terrorist or anything like that. They have that ability if they want to. Now, let's look at the size of the plane. All right? Now, you could lose Cessna planes, little prop planes, crop dusters. When a plane like this goes down, let's use simple deductive reasoning, all right? You have to look at it from a crime standpoint. First thing you do, look at who was on the plane. You go into the flight manifest, right? Okay. You have to look at all of that. Then the next thing you have to do, you have to say to yourself, we have all this technology in 2014. Are we really going to lose a plane of this size? Then you beat around all of that stuff like a hockey puck, and you say, you know what happened here? You know what happened here? The powers that be know what happened with this plane, and they just do not want to say. They're duping the people at this given point, right? And that's what they're doing. They're duping the people. Because how do you actually lose a plane totally in the modern-day era? This is not 1960. This is not 1970. Based on what I just told you, I could come out of my house right now. NSA could trial me up easily, not necessarily the police department. Find me 123. You also yourself could come out your house and say, okay, this is the guy's address. Boom. And if I'm standing in my house, you just might catch me in real time if the satellite is passing over. Most of the time, you have to wait about 2 hours. You see what's going on here? If we use simple deductive reasoning, with all the technology that's happening, we have to come to the deductive reasoning. They knew what happened with the plane. They're just not telling the people. That's it. It's real simple, you know? It's real simple. That's just my opinion going forward. Back over to Sir Raffle Nerd.
All right, callers, hold on. We'll get to you in a moment. I want to take a quick musical break. And we do try to push the urban alternative here. When we get back more on the Malaysian mystery, I'll say this much just for food for thought. I find it interesting. You may want to look this up, ladies and gentlemen. I find it interesting that the manufacturer of the plane's engine was Rolls-Royce. And Rolls-Royce, the company, you know, that connection, it's obviously a legendary, engine builder, perhaps one of the best engines in the world per se. You know, definitely Rolls Royce has that legacy. And the Wall Street Journal was told that, you're mentioning Rolls Royce a little too much. Pull it back. At some point, they stopped mentioning Rolls Royce in connection to this plane because they didn't want that connection. You know, it's obviously Rolls Royce being connected to failure, not a good look. But what happened to the truth? Isn't that, one too many times, take all references out to Rolls-Royce's involvement as the manufacturer of that plane's engine. Actually, I'm just putting it out there. That has happened. You can look that up. It's crazy. There's so many different angles of this thing and how people are treating this thing. Who gives a damn about Rolls-Royce? Who's looking at it that way? But it doesn't show you big business. So many different tentacles, tangents coming out of this story. More when we get back after the break. This is Bad Brains, Legendary Rockers, Hair. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Of his hand. If you were blind, if and where, you would shine and not your hand. What I'll find you in inside me. Down a high to the light. A weak man's love can be a strong man's
There you go, the mighty Bad Brains, Hair, doing that cover of Hair. Folks, this is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek in Review edition of the show. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Talking about the Malaysian Flight 370, we'll talk about it for a few more moments, and then we'll move things along. Still have a lot more show to go to. Let's go to the lines, go to the phones. 201. Welcome to After Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, guys. It's Q Storm. I'm doing my weekly pilgrimage from Jersey back to Philly. Hope all's well with you guys.
Pretty good, man. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. I'll keep my statement brief in regards to the Malaysian flight. Just a couple things. First thing is, with all due respect to the captain, I guess I don't understand why everyone is so shocked that with all our technology we could lose this plane. I mean, we're talking about the Indian Ocean, I believe, which is, I think they're saying that they're covering, they're trying to search in an area the size of the United States. And if you recall, in 2001, we had not one, not two, but three flights that were hijacked and traveled over highly trafficked airspace to commit a huge terrorist act. So if the pilot turned off his black box or his beacon, I guess it stands within the realm of reason that the plane would be hard to detect. The second thing is, in your comparison, which was duly noted by myself, about this possibly being terrorism, and I suggested that it wasn't because terrorists would have stepped up to the plate by now. And using the Boston bombing as a comparison, I think it's probably a little short because we're talking about two guys who simply walked into a public area, a public route, and deposited two bombs as opposed to taking over of an entire airline and traveling that airline from point A to point B, going through the security point, X-ray point. I think there's a lot of more complexity with the airline alleged hijacking or whatever took place. So I don't know if the two are parallel. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, duly noted. I still have my opinions. You have your opinions. I mean, you know, we don't know what really happened. I will agree with you in this regard. We can't always depend so much on technology. Let me put you on hold because I'm here in the background. We can't always depend on technology because he's correct. The amount of miles, nautical miles, when you factor in, again, this is the Indian Ocean, this is the South China Sea, this is the Gulf of Thailand. I mean, the area we're talking about is immense, and you're also talking about an uncooperative Malaysian government. That factors in this as well. Now, when you point to where there's only two guys that were responsible and they kind of were willy-nilly about what happened in Boston, that tragedy, you're forgetting that there was only a couple of guys that were responsible for 9/11. Levy complexity toward them. But what they did really was not complex. That's the whole, dare I hate to use the word beauty, but that's the whole, for lack of another term, that's the beauty of terrorism. And I'm not saying terrorism is beautiful, but I'm saying as far as its simplicity. With all of our technology and all of our surveillance equipment and that kind of thing, these people are using middle-aged tactics, practically, to cause havoc. I mean, they used a toaster. What was it? Some kind of allegedly there was a crock pot and nails. That's Toys R Us level type stuff. But you know, we know, as the legend goes, that these hijackers for the planes of 9/11, they learn how to fly, they learn how to take off, not how to land. That wasn't a clue enough for folks. And the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, I mean, it only takes a couple of dudes. It only takes a couple of dudes. So, I mean, I don't know why you were led to believe that it would be a mass effort. There might be some mastermind in the background, you know. But, Q, I mean, we're looking at a couple of – some of these tragedies – are a couple of dudes. And maybe you have a Mandarin-like figure, to be Afro-nerdic. You have a Mandarin-like shadowy figure pulling the strings in the background. But all this is always a couple of dudes ready to wreak havoc. So, you know, until we know, we won't know. Speculation. Captain, anything else before we move along?
Nope. Not at all.
Talk about the term bossy, believe it or not, bossy. We have Facebook COO, Chief Operations Officer. We have her with this new Lean In campaign. And her campaign essentially deals with the removal of the word, or her wanting to remove the word bossy. It's very much a gender issue, female, I don't want to use the term females, pardon me, women's issue. It's very much a woman's issue per se, but it bothers me, Captain. And when things bother me, I overanalyze, superanalyze. I'm going to play this clip courtesy of ABC News. They're going to unpack it for you for a few moments, then we will feast in, if you don't mind. But I think Sandberg, Ms. Sandberg, has a hustle she wants you to buy. I'm not buying into it. Sorry. Some people are bossy. Some people are niggas, Captain. I'd like for that word to disappear. We're not doing a good job of it. And I think I know why. Chris Rock knows why. We spoke about that behind the scenes. Anyway, we'll get into it. ABC News on this bossy campaign. Don't you believe it?
New campaign against the B word, not the one you think. Some of America's most successful women now believe that the word bossy can be holding our daughters back. They're banding together to ban it. ABC's Cynthia McFadden has the story.
Okay, raise your hand if anyone's ever called you bossy.
Bossy. It's a word kids use all the time, and so do parents and teachers. But it's a loaded word, says Sheryl Sandberg, a dangerous one.
We need to help them lean in.
And she is launching a campaign to ban it.
We know that by middle school, more boys than girls want to lead, and if you ask girls why they don't want to do it, they don't want to be disliked and they don't want to be called bossy.
We saw that play out with this group of first grade girls at the Hunter School in New York City.
So what's more important, to be liked or to be a leader?
If you're a leader, your friends will get mad at you and they won't want to be your friend anymore.
And that is the heart of the problem, says Sandberg.
We are 50% of the population. We are 5% of the Fortune 500 CEOs. We are 17% of the board seats. We are 19% of the U.S. Congress. That's not enough for 50% of the population.
Why does it happen? She says it all comes back to bossy.
I was called bossy when I was in ninth grade. My teacher took my best friend, Mindy, aside, and she said, you shouldn't be friends with Cheryl. She's bossy. And that hurt.
So she's launched the Ban Bossy campaign.
Being labeled something matters.
Complete with a star-studded PSA.
I'm not bossy. I'm the boss.
To her organization, Lean In. Today, the head of the Girl Scouts, Anna Maria Chavez, joins her.
Why does bossy matter?
Because words matter. We need to start naming girls with positive attributes like strong, confident, resilient, with grit, not bossy.
It is, as you call it, the other B word.
We call girls bossy on the playground. We then call them too aggressive or other B words in the workplace. We should have the expectation that girls lead so that we applaud it.
Well, Sandberg says there is no room for bullying or rudeness in Ban Bossy. Real leadership requires neither. You know, our website, goodmorningamerica.com, has more with Yahoo on details of all of this. Sandberg is, by the way, of course, on the board of the Disney company, the parent company of ABC. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I was certainly called bossy. Yeah.
But it didn't hold you back.
No, and Sandberg says some people overcome it, and she certainly did. She went from bossy to boss. She said it was her parents, and I'd say it was mine as well. Yeah. It said, you know, go for it.
I love it. As the mom of two girls, I think it's great because you shouldn't be afraid to speak your mind. Mm-hmm. And I think some of us do feel like we have to stay in our place. I mean, being raised in certain ways in certain parts of the country. For sure. I felt like that.
I agree. Absolutely. I agree. But this was fascinating that you took this on and the project.
I love it.
I love it. Thank you.
All right. Folks, you're probably wondering, what is AfroNerd? Why does he have a bugaboo about bossy? This could be a non-issue or a controversy. It's a bunch of nothing. One would think that. And maybe you're right. That, you know, we all have opinions. But the reason why I started to dig in on this, Captain, and I told you this behind the scenes, is, you know, one of the good things about doing this show is it keeps me informed. I've always been somewhat of a current events type of person. The Oracle, the tangential producer of the show, inculcated in his son this notion of current events. And even to this day, when I speak with the Oracle, we're both flabbergasted at how people, many folk, appear to have a disinterest in current events. When you, I still come across folks, colleagues, people who are on paper well-educated, But when you mention some things, I mean, I've had conversations again with colleagues when you talk about other interests being that, being this show, and you might say, hey, well, you know, we interviewed Soledad O'Brien, we've interviewed, you know, so many notables. Who's that? Oh, wait a minute. Who's that? You don't know who she – I mean, you have cable? Have you? Did you look at CNN for like 10 years? I mean, well-educated people, people with MBAs, law degrees, all the way down. I can't even just say – I can't levy this level of ignorance just against folks who may not have letters behind their names. So the captain and I – and actually, the member, the stalwart listenership, we're always passing emails back and forth. It's kind of a hobby. Sergio, Q-Storm, Tokyo Mike, everybody is in on this, helping with this enterprise, so to speak. And we pass information around. I dig it. I can never get enough information. I want to know everything, if that's possible. So sometimes I hear things as a shadow, which is like my favorite word for some reason. I engulf information on a shadow level as well as a more conscious level. I just kind of glanced at this bossy thing. It's disturbing because I know what Ms. Sandberg is doing. She has this lean-in campaign. We have Beyonce Knowles and quite a few notables. My dear Condoleezza Rice, she's caught up in this web of madness. And it's all about women taking a stand against the bossy critique. Now, the problem I have with it is, okay, we can say bossy is gender specific, maybe. I haven't heard the term bossy being applied to men. But let me tell you something. There's a word that I would say is worse than bossy that has been levied against male men in power or male men who are in leadership positions. If their attitude, if their attitude is not to the liking of some folk, degrading to some folk, guess what? A male will be called an a-hole. I'm editing myself. I'd rather say the full word. A male will be called the a-hole. A woman may not be called an a-hole, she'll be called bossy, or the other B word. But the issue is, what if that's exactly what you are? See, it comes off as if it's a campaign to work itself around legitimate criticism. Now, if you're just called bossy and you're not, that's another thing. But the issue is, listen, I don't like the word nigger. I don't like it. I don't like the word nigga. The issue is you have folks who are out there that have adopted that persona. They've adopted that nigga and nigger aesthetic. It has become a culture. And bossy may be something that that might apply to some people. I've worked with women who were that. I've worked with women who were certainly not. I've worked with men that were bossy, but if you're going to be gender specific, you might not have called them bossy, you call them an a-hole. You're called something. When you look at the definition of bossy, it's called overbearing. The synonyms that come out, domineering, pushy, overbearing, authoritarian, controlling. Suppose the person is that. So to work yourself around these words, just try not to be bossy. Just do your job. Or maybe you want to be that. I don't know. But you see, every once in a while, there's these campaigns that mean nothing. Didn't we bury the N-word like 10 years ago? We gave it a funeral. Where is it now? It's been resurrected many times over. Captain, your thoughts?
I think leadership is for the few. Let me repeat that. Leadership in general is for the few. And in order to lead, you have to have a very crocodile type of skin. It's not going to be an easy way to go, especially once you get in the leadership role. You get names hurled at you from the competition left and right. So you have to have, you know, coming up, because some people say they're born. Some people say it's something that happens from the environment. I think it's both. You know, certain things happen to you in your environment that act as an annealing effect on the individual that sharpens them up to become leaders. I think this here, it might empower the girls, but in the real world situation, you're not ready because that's not the real world. Real world, when it's time for you to step to the forefront, you have to be able to, this is Sparta type of mentality. That's what you have to have, you understand? In your mental. You don't necessarily have to project that totally outward all the time. And I think this type of mentality, this type of training takes from that because it's making it too easy. You know, leadership, that's why leadership is for the few. You play football. Let's just take sports, for example, you know. And it can be also female sports, you know, volleyball, it could be, you know, baseball, it could be anything, basketball. You have a captain. There's a reason that person is a captain. They're a good player, but they also have certain qualities within them. And they, a lot of times, not all the time, they have a bit tougher skin. This bit tougher skin allows you to rally the rest of your troops. So people say, this is the leader. Let's go do this. Now, the same thing at times. In the business world, a lot of these people that run companies, at least from the male standpoint, a lot of times, not all the time, a lot of times, but not all the time, they have played sports. Teaches you how to take on the superior opponent and win. You know, it definitely does help in the business atmosphere. Some of these women also, too, not all the time, of course, you got women that go to Harvard, they go to Yale, they never did anything, and they run the corporation, of course. But this also helps, you know. So I think in the overall view, you know, this takes away from the situation. This is why also, too, some parents send their kids to, like, martial arts. You know, it gives them a certain amount of discipline. It's not easy. And in martial arts, you learn to, you know, handle people who are bigger than you. You could take that out also in the business world. You see, martial arts is not easy either. And sometimes when you're fighting, girls too, because girls do martial arts, you get called names. You know, you get called names. So I understand the point of view, you know, with the empowerment in the real world, in a real world situation. Not the practice. That's practice now. And you're supposed to be practicing for the real world. I think they're hurting them in the real world. You know, because a little kid, at a little point, when you're a little kid, you want everybody to like you. But there comes a point, normally around 9th or 10th grade, you realize that's not how it really works out here. You understand? And you pick it up, and you start to realize what you have to do in order to go forward. That's just my opinion. Back over to you, Seraph.
Yeah, you know, you just reminded me of something also, Captain. You know, listen, the late Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was called the Iron Lady. Matter of fact, there was a biopic that came out a few years ago that was entitled The Iron Lady. She was actually respected and also, you know, reviled. And that's what happens with leadership. When you are in a leadership position, you're going to catch it from all sides. And it seems as if Ms. Sandberg is trying to avoid what comes from leadership. What do you care if someone calls you bossy? They're going to call you something. You know, President Barack Obama is revered and reviled. I mean, it's very difficult to be in a position of leadership or to take a leadership role or even to be forward-thinking or to be a maverick or to be, dare I say, a contrarian and you not be – you're not – listen, when we do this show, especially in the beginning, it was very difficult to do this show in some to take these positions, but it got to the point where you do what you have to do. You have to be true to thine self. But Ms. Sandberg, I respect her positioning. I respect her scholastic acumen. You know, she's a Harvard graduate. She's an MBA from Harvard. She attended Harvard College as a bachelor's in economics. She's a relatively young woman, and she's worth $1 billion. She's a billionaires. You know, she's had stock in Facebook. You know, so I think it was mentioned in the clip, she sits on the board of Walt Disney. She's like, what, 43 or 44 years old? I mean, come on. I think what this really is, and I have a pretty good feeling for this kind of stuff, she's worth a lot of money, Captain. She's a relatively young woman, and she can do whatever she wants to do. When you're worth $1 billion, heck, if you're worth millions of dollars, you have a certain – you take on a cause célèb. You take on causes. You start analyzing, like, minutia. Instead of really getting into the bare bones and really doing the work, the cultural work, I think that needs to be done, you take on these faux causes, these fake causes, these cause célèbres. You know, you start to, your nose is in the air. Come on. Knock it off. If you really are, who cares if you call? Come on. I wish someone would call me bossy. It means I'm doing my job, maybe. You know? You could be called. I was trying to find this. Could we going to move along? I was trying to find this clip, Captain. Oh, man. The late, great Morton Downey Jr. Some folks may not remember this gentleman. Chain smoking, big white cat teeth. He was the son of a famed Irish folk singer, Morton Downey Sr. No relation to Robert Downey, mind you. I'm pretty sure. No relation to Robert Downey. Although Robert Downey is related to a famed director. His father was a famed director, but that's a different thing. Anyway, Morton Downey Jr., his show, was a precursor to many of the shows that are taken for granted nowadays. These Maury Povich shows, these wild – I think he's probably the best precursor would be you know the show, Captain, Jensing a Game. You know, the clownish show with the Cincinnati mayor, former mayor of Cincinnati, you know, with the ratchetness, lower-tier whites, lower-tier blacks, men of Jewish descent, glasses, Jerry Springer. Ah, finally. Precursor to Jerry Springer. But I think he's even more entertaining, Mort Downey. Mort Downey was speaking to a young lady. I wish I could find this clip. If I could find this clip, I got to make it part of our boards, Captain. Speaking to this lady, and she says, they get into an argument. That's his style. He's a very in-your-face. He would get into a person's face and just start yelling at them, like just inches away from their face. Uncomfortably, you know, that uncomfortable distance, he would breach that barrier between people. And this woman, I can't even tell you what the discussion was about, but he called her sweetie. Or honey or something. He said, listen, sweetie, blah, 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 blah. And then she says, don't you call me sweetie. What would you prefer for me to call you? Bitch! In her face. The audience, I mean, this is also when the audience was like the hype, really, at the height of hypeness. I think Ricky Lake might have been around the same time. There's a few shows that were kind of coming in right after. Because he passed on, I think probably from cancer, I would believe, because he smoked like a chimney. But I understand her having an issue with someone. You know, you can't call someone honey or sweetie. But the way you went about it, there's worse things to be called. There's worse things to be called. Some folks have an issue. They wonder why I call myself the Afro nerd, or why would someone want to be, especially someone black, because black folks oftentimes have, you know, I've gone through this. Black folks often have the cool persona, or they want to have the cool persona. So when you call yourself a nerd, especially a black nerd, I've had folks of varied ethnicities say, well, why would you want to call yourself that? I said, I chose this N-word. There are worse N-words to use. This is my N-word. I'll toe the line for this N-word. You see what I mean? At some point, there are worse words to be called. I could be called a nerd or a nigga. Or actually, there's somebody on YouTube we talked about before, Captain. He called himself the nerd nigga. There you go. I can't take it anymore. All right, folks. Again, Midweek in Review, Afternoon Radio. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Something we got to talk about, Captain. I need to put this link in the chat room. I don't know if folks saw this. You know, did anyone, I'm going to have to say it plainly. I'm not going to edit myself. Not a complete expletive, but I have to say what it is. Did anyone see that ass whipping in Arizona by a young man of color? Did anyone see this? We have to speak about this. And this was a self-described New Yorker who received his buttocks in hand, at the hands of a man, of a white male. I'm just mentioning it out there because it's really irrelevant. The ethnicities of the individuals really are irrelevant. But it's the fact that there is this mystique of the New York thugged out black male where he believes his own hype. Not the case this time, Captain. I didn't pull the audio on this because I think you have to see it. You just can't hear it. But this is to make it plain, it's going viral. It's one of those world star hip hop videos that one would perceive to be buffoonish, and it is. But this time, it didn't go down exactly the way you would think a world star hip hop video was supposed to go. You have a man of color, self-described New Yorker, in Arizona, mouthing off to a white Arizonian. Both these men appear to be under 30. And the black male, you know, used expletives, told the white man to fellate him multiple times. I'm from New York. Whoever took this footage with his camera phone, he should be getting an Oscar next year. He should be getting an Oscar in cinematography because it was so clear. It looks as if the man of color threw the first punch after talking and goading and the camera. I'm from New York, and he's the one saying the N-word, by the way, not the white male. Not the white male. It's the black male. That's the oddity of this thing. The black male calls the white male the N-word, calls himself the N-word. I'm from New York, this, that, and the other. I'm ready to go. And he gets his behind handed. He gets a flurry of hits to the back of the head. And luckily, someone intervened and told the white male that had the upper hand to stop it because you're going to end up killing this guy. And the guy got up like he was some baby seal on his stomach, Captain. It's your thoughts, sir? I mean, you know, you're Luke Cage, a.k.a. you're Luke Cage. You know, you can handle yourself, sir. What are your thoughts about this?
Size and strength matters, man. The bigger guy won. You know, that's what it was. The black guy should have, channeling MMA right now, should have kept the fight standing up. He at least had a chance, man. Once the fight went to the ground, it was over, man. Once he got slammed on the car, you know, then he went to the ground, it was over. It was over. Strength is a factor. There you go. That's all. Hilarious, though. Buffoonery,
yeah,
but hilarious.
But you know what, Captain? You know, we spoke about this. We've been trying to give people some sense of logic, and we can talk about the Trayvon Martin tragedy. We can talk about George Zimmerman's comportment is troublesome. But I will tell you this. The way this young man of color was bested at this gas station, he might have needed to put out a jammy on this guy. So, you know, when black folk, many were saying that, well, you know, there was an altercation and there was no need for a Zimmerman to pull out a gun. What makes this, by the way, folks, go to the chat room. I have the link available of the altercation. Suppose that beatdown occurred this way with young Trayvon getting the best of Zimmerman. If it went down like that, he would have had to pull out a jammy. He would have had to pull out a jammy. It would have easily happened that way. Because this man, this is another thing too. This man that was beating on this young man was so enraged that someone had to tell him, listen, you're going to kill this guy. Knock it off. But he, you know, when you're in that beast mode, he wasn't ready to stop punching this guy. Suppose that was the way that it went down with Trayvon and Zimmerman. Zimmerman getting knocked about his head like that. I'm just asking, am I wrong? Captain, I'm asking, is it plausible? Suppose it happened that way. We're seeing a fight that could have easily have been the fight that was that the Zimmerman and Trayvon fight was. Now, if it was like now, we look at it now because it was in broad daylight. There were witnesses, and there were other people there to say knock it off. But that young man was getting beat up the way he was getting beat up, something fierce. At that moment, he could have easily pulled out a jammy and shot that man. And I'm not so sure he would have been in the wrong for doing that. Because that man looked like he wasn't going to stop. If Trayvon was in the same beast mode and wasn't able to stop beating the head of Zimmerman, it is what it is. Now, black folks don't want to hear that. And I'm not saying I'm a Zimmerman supporter because his comportment stinks after the fact. But we have to become more realistic of what happens when there is an altercation, an altercation, an altercation. There you go. But I had to throw that out there. That boy got an ass-whipping. Pardon the expletive. But there's no other way to describe that. And the baby seal thing is, you know, the camera pans. Everyone leaves. The parking lot is full. The gas station parking lot is full, Captain. Cars are moving away. Everybody moves away and leaves this kid a pulp in a parking spot on cement. And he moves his head up because his brain has been jostled around his skull after this beating, and he looks like a baby seal. That's all I got to say. Be leery of talking crap when you're out of towner, assuming that people care or people are threatened by black male bravado, especially New York black male bravado. It's not working anywhere, homie, as they say. Not working, homie. That's it. Captain, we got about under 5 minutes remaining. Always more topics to get into. I did want to talk about, you know what? Wow, we didn't even get a chance to talk about the Get On Up biopic, as well as the All Is By My Side biopic. The All Is By My Side biopic is the Jimi Hendrix biographical film starring Andre 3000. And I did not know that Oscar winner John Ridley wrote and directed this film. Now, the only issue is also British-Irish film, which is interesting as well. Well, we know that Jimmy really got discovered in Britain. No, he's an American, but he went over across the pond where they got him. And then he came back to the States, and they got him then. But he wasn't really received. We didn't know what he was. The Brits got it, then he came back. Anyway, we may not have enough time to really delve deep into these two biopics. I guess I'm concerned on both sides. I'll just say briefly that the All Is By My Side, there's some footage of this film. You know, actually, yeah, it hasn't really been released. I think yes, it was out in 2013. But I think the formal release will not be until sometime this year. Anyway, the Hendricks estate refused to give this film his music. Without the music of Jimi Hendrix, I mean, this is a fail, wouldn't you say?
Well, you need the fascinating guitar riffs of Jimi Hendrix. You know, that's what it's all about. You don't have that, you really don't have much. You know, that's really what it is. I'm not going to say it's a fail. You know, I give it a chance, but that's what you need, you know, in order to bake this cake and put some icing on it and pass it around to the masses. It's going to be interesting to see what they do to fill in as far as the music is concerned. I want to see how they pulled that off. That's all.
And with the James Brown biopic, Get On Up, we see that we have some famous names behind this thing. Brian Grazer, who is the partner, the film business partner of Ron Howard, and Mick Jagger, their producers on this thing. I'm just concerned that front of the screen, but where's the black talent behind the screen? Behind this film for Get On Up. Now, we spoke behind the scenes, Captain, that we know that Spike Lee was instrumental with the Malcolm X film. I think Norman Jewison originally had that film, and Spike fought with the studio to say, listen, you need a black person to really get into this story. And thankfully, you know, he did that. But it seems like that was the 92, 93. Our sensibilities might have been better then. Now we're just rolling over on this stuff. You know what? We got less than a minute, Captain. We're going to have to revisit this. I want to really dig in deep, and hopefully Sergio will be around because he'll lend his expertise on this stuff. But I do want to get in on these. So I think there's a larger issue with black cultural product. I mean, product that we really need to see. These are historical figures, and you would want these films to be done right and to have the black cultural influence, as far as the machinations, the inner machinations, inner workings of that film. I think I would like to see some black talent involved. And I'm concerned that that's not what we're seeing. All right, folks, it's been real. We'll do it again this Saturday. Check out Brandon Easton, graphic novelist. He'll stop by at 6 p.m. We'll do it again Saturday, 6 p.m. See you then. This is Sweet Dan, classic groove. Sweet Dan by Betty Everett. Let's groove.
But mama don't know now. stop.